Pastor came up to me and said, Dr. Shah, what kind of a doctor are you? So I said, I'm a pediatric surgeon. So he said, what does pediatric mean? So I said, pediatric means to do with children. So when the time came to introduce me, he said, this is Dr. Vinod Shah. He's a childish surgeon. The final session is about some leadership tips. And I have about, I'm going to take you through about half a dozen of them. The first one is, I've said that a leader should be driven by a what, not a how. Should a leader, he should be driven by a what or a who? Should he be driven by an ideology or a person? And we know that it was a personal calling of God to each one of us. He said, follow me, to a lot of his disciples. But does it make any difference in real life whether you're following an ideology or whether you're following a person? Well, there was a book that sold lots of copies, and this is about violence. And there was this Harvard psychology professor who's written a book called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And he says that the violence has declined because the toxic ideologies have reduced. That means the more ideology we have, the more violence there is. We might not fully agree with the psychology professor and all that he said, but one thing is certain, that if you have an ideology that is divorced from a person, then that ideology can lead to violence. We all know that the jihadist ideology is very violent and is divorced from a personal understanding of God. And even among Christians, we have this example of a group of people, including this particular pro-life activist. His ideology was pro-life. And what he did was, he shot down an obstetrician in Florida and four others, because he thought he was helping the cause of humanity by killing the obstetrician who was doing abortions. So you can see that following an ideology can be dangerous. And I've already told you about how following a person does not really can keep a person more sort of moderated in times of stress. I just skipped to that because I did that in a different form the first day. The second lesson for the leader is that we need to celebrate grace and not achievements. Now, what do I mean? Success, leadership, and arrogance are intricately woven together. That means a leader is supposed to succeed, but when he succeeds, he becomes arrogant. So you are in a catch-22 situation. What do you do? You know, when Jesus sent the 70, he sent to different places, and they came back with lots of stories. They said, they were all talking about their achievements. They said, the lame got up and they walked, the sick became well, the demons were cast out. And then Jesus warned them and he said, don't rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that the names are written in heaven. That means what Jesus was saying is, don't glory in your achievements, but glory in the fact that your names are written in the book of life. It means grace. There was this man who's very famous. He was the son of missionary parents in China. When he studied, they were American, so he went to the US and he studied, and then he founded the Time magazine, the Life magazine, and the Fortune magazine. You know, fantastic achievement. But he had this habit of talking about his achievements all the time, in all the fora, you know, about the history of how there were so many difficulties and how he overcame them and how he achieved these several landmarks and all that. So people in his organization and people in his class, they called him God's classmate, because he was so arrogant and so conceited. But remember, he was a Christian. So it is very easy to talk about your achievements and become arrogant as soon as you stop glorying in the grace of God. And then there's another story I want to tell you about John Milton. A lot of you may have heard about him. It's supposed to be the greatest poem ever written, you know, Paradise Lost. It's a story of the fall of man, you know, in the Garden of Eden. And it became very famous and all that. And then he said, "Singular indeed is the favor of God towards me that he has called me for all this to the defense of liberty." And some of the critics said, Milton initially believed in God and then he believed in himself. He became quite arrogant. So you see, it's very easy to take the first step towards achievement and then the next step towards arrogance if you don't do what Jesus commanded his disciples, which is don't glory in your achievements, but glory in the fact that you have the grace of God. Celebrating grace. Do not rejoice in this that the spirits are subject to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. I think someone talked about accountability on the first day, how we need to be accountable. And I just want to start with the story of David and Bathsheba in 2 Samuel 11. We all know the story. David was on the roof of his palace. He took a nap and then was strolling about. And then let's imagine David coming down from the palace. The guy comes down. And he comes to the palace sort of office. And probably there was a agriculture minister or food minister, there was the war minister or some kind of a ministry, and maybe some other kind of support staff. And he comes down and he tells one of them, "Hey, find out who that girl is." The guy goes and finds out. And he says, "Okay, go and fetch her for me." And the question is, what would you do if David came and said, "Go and fetch Bathsheba for me"? You might think, being in this democratic Australian culture, that you would say, "Hey, old chap, that's not quite on." But I think if you are there in David's time and in his culture, you would be afraid for your neck. So they immediately obliged. The right thing would have been to say, "Hey David, you already got half a dozen wives, shall I call one of them or all of them? And you would hope that David would have said, oh, I see, okay. I hadn't thought of that option or something. And he would change his mind. But that requires debate, you know, some kind of a negotiation. And that opportunity for debate was not there. And reason was the kind of leadership David provided. He was not open for debate or dissent. If you disagree, you would have it. And so people just said yes to whatever he wanted. There is a similar story about this king in Christian Andersen's book for children. And he's, you know the story, most of you know, I guess, that the king was actually naked because some tailor said, you know, I'm going to give you fantastic clothes that only the wise people can see. And the king thought, you know, since I'm wise, I should be able to see it, but he didn't see it, but, you know, he pretended to be wise. And so the guy parades about naked and he tells his people in the court, isn't that a fantastic dress? And the people in the court say, yes, fantastic. But a child says, no, you're naked, you know. So, the fact is that none of them told him he was naked. And they did not tell him because of the king's leadership style. Because he would not allow dissent or debate. And I think that if you want to be safe as a leader, then you have to not only allow dissent or debate, you have to encourage debate and dissent sometimes. Because it's in listening to other people that you learn, you know, things about yourself. We have a lot of prejudices about who we are. We really don't know who we are properly. And we need other people's eyes to be able to tell us exactly what we look like. And so, debate and dissent are very important elements. They are parts of accountability structure. And if you don't have accountability, and if you are the kind of person who wants yes men around you, usually you will end up making a mess. What can you do to encourage dissent and debate? And that's a good question to ask yourself about how you're organizing, you know, your leadership team. Leadership is about being oral rather than oral leader. That means, you know, in India we have lots of ministers who talk a lot, and lots of leaders who do a lot of talking, but they don't spend time listening. So that ratio is very important. You know, how much time you spend talking and how much time you spend listening. I have got a picture of the nervous system, because the nervous system is so made that you get afferent impulses and then you decide on the efferent impulses. That means the nervous system listens first before it acts. And so also, we have to listen carefully before you make decisions. But most of the leaders don't have enough sort of time to listen. Now, I'm not sure if you've seen, I'm sure you've heard of this concept called emotional intelligence. And in that interesting book, which came out, I think, more than 15 years ago, he says, Daniel Goleman, He says that EQ is more important than IQ. That means emotional quotient is more important than intelligence quotient. And how do you develop, or why is it more important? Because it is with people with EQ who become leaders, who can influence others and who are like more likely to change the world. People with high IQ are not likely to, you know, change the world. So EQ is far more important than IQ. He establishes that in the book by several examples and some research done among all the industry in the US. And then he says that the way to develop EQ is about empathy. That means the ability to understand another person's EQ. That means if you can put yourself in another person's shoes, then you have EQ. And the more you can do that, the higher EQ you have, and the better you will be as a leader. And EQ, he said, is listening with understanding. Autistic children. You know, one of the features of autistic children is that you hug them and they will still be unresponsive. They cannot respond to affection. And that is because they haven't been processing afferent impulses. They haven't got any, they don't have the mechanism to process afferent information, and therefore they cannot respond properly. And you can have autistic individuals, people who don't listen or just keep, don't respond to information that is available outside, and you can have autistic organizations. So I'm saying that leadership is about being the ear rather than being oral. You know, there are leaders who are 20-80, that means they listen 20% of the time, they talk 80% of the time. But the book of James tells us that you should listen more often than, and you know, talk later. It's proven that EQ is more important than IQ because life is basically composed of relationships with other people. Okay. And finally, he also says that temperament is not destiny. If you don't, if you're finding listening difficult, don't tell people that I can't do it, because that is not, it's not your fate. You can change it. Listening with understanding can influence your brain circuit and help you to become a better listener. So you have to practice it. You and you know, it's listening is such an important thing, not only for a leader. It's a good thing for marriage relationships. It's good for, you know, doctor-physician relationships, for being a Christian. Yesterday, Alan and myself were talking, and we were talking about how important it was to listen to God rather than, you know, just keep talking to God. Okay, so that was about listening rather than talking, and how listening can make you a good leader. And then another important important tip for a leader is that he needs to focus on character rather than an image. Focusing on character rather than an image. Okay, now what's that mean? We all know, I'm not sure the present generation would have seen Charlie Chaplin movies, but he was a millionaire, the youngest millionaire in history. He was a very very famous actor. I think he was the first one to act in silent movies. He was married several times, and he had this habit of marrying 16-year-olds. But one day, the guy went to a restaurant, and he sat for about 10 minutes, and nobody sort of rushed to him and said, "Charlie, give me your autograph." So, and nobody came to ask him if he wanted what he wanted. So, he was really furious because he was not even recognized, leave alone being served. So, he went up to the manager and he said, "Sir, I want to go home." And so the manager said, "Shall I get you a taxi, sir?" So Charlie said, "Get me 12 taxis. One taxi for me to go home in, and the other taxis as escort. So you know who I am." The point of the story is this, that Charlie Chaplin was trying to create an image about who he was, and when that did not work, he got really angry. He spent most of his energy trying to create an image, but you know, his character was, he was childish. He was busy developing an image rather than a character. We have a somewhat similar example of this particular actress. She had a habit of inviting people for dinner, and then when the time came for dessert, she would serve them dessert and then put on a record that was full of applause. You know, applause in Rio de Janeiro, applause in Cologne, and stuff like that. And she would make sure that all the guests knew exactly who she was. A similar story. He wrote to his father, you know, this great Mozart. He wrote to his father, "I'm never in good humor when I'm in a town where I'm not recognized." You know, they were all trying to create an image, and when that did not work, they got angry. But if you look at the character, it was not really fantastic. And do you know people like that in the Bible, in the New Testament, who are trying to create an image? The Pharisees, yes. What did the Pharisees do? They were creating an image and trying. What are the examples we have about their wanting to create an image? They prayed publicly, they gave alms publicly, and then they, when they did good things like fasting, they made sure that they looked horrible so that people would know that they were fasting. So they were creating an image. And so Jesus attacked them. And Jesus said, finally, the advice he advised we have about this kind of behavior is when you pray, close the door, pray to your Father which is in secret, and the Father which sees in secret shall reward you openly. That means if you do things where people can't see you, if you do good when people can't see you, that will develop character. If you do things in a way that people can see, then you are developing an image. I would call this anti-image creating activity. You know, going into your room, closing the door and praying is an anti-image. It's a character developing activity. When you give, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. That is an anti-image creating activity. Or when you fast, have a shower, put on nice clothes so that people don't suspect that you're doing some good. That's again an anti-image creating activity. So we want, if you want to be a leader who has moral authority, who has acceptance as, you know, someone who's authentic and genuine, and that is very important for a leader, then
You have to develop a character. You don't have to worry about creating an image. We have this advice about developing character. Pray secretly, give anonymously, and do good obscurely. And then again, another tip. How much time do we have? Another?
10-15 minutes.
10 minutes. Another tip we have is a leader thinks potential, not competition. For example, according to me, this vision statement is very defective. And why is that? Because this is about being better than somebody else. But that is not what vision should be about. Our vision is not about being better than somebody else. Our vision is to do something. Full stop. And okay, let's look at this prayer. Now, two men went to pray. And one guy said, "I thank thee that I am not as other men are." That means it was about being better than somebody else. I thank God that I am better than this guy. That means he was in competition with somebody else and some other people. And his prayer was not approved. But this time, he said, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." You know, he was only looking at himself. And he said to himself, "You know, I have great potential. I had great potential. I did not reach that great potential. And I have sinned. And God, be merciful to me, a sinner." So he was not in competition with other men. He was only looking at himself. And God was pleased with that prayer. And so, one was trying to compete with himself, overcoming his sins. The other was in competition. I'm glad I'm not that person. So, I'm saying that leadership should not be about doing better than that particular person, or doing better than your predecessor, or doing better than that particular organization. It should be about reaching your full potential, or reaching the full potential of your organization. How can I explore and use up all the gifts that God has given me? Now that should be your question, and that should be your motivation. That is called competing against yourself. You know, in some schools, they have a different kind of evaluation system. They grade you in the first month or something, and in the second month they want you to do better than yourself. Now that is, I think, a good system of evaluation. But in most schools, it's a competitive thing. You know, he's first, he's second, he's third. There's a different kind of evaluation. Okay. Another tip is about sublimation. Have you heard that word? Sublimation. I think people who have a little Catholic background may have heard that word. I think that word comes from perhaps from chemistry, I'm not sure. But we have the same phenomenon in chemistry. You know, the iron crystals, the solid iron crystals, they don't become liquid. They just vaporize without becoming liquid. And so also, you know, dry ice vaporizes without actually becoming liquid. And we call that sublimation. You know the story of the Khmer Rouge, where Pol Pot decimated in Cambodia 40% of the population during the, you know, communist regime. and there was a prisoner who escaped. And he tells a story. He was in a Billy Graham crusade. And then he talked about his experience during the Pol Pot regime, how he was interned and tortured and punished. And one of the things he had to do was that he had to clean the toilets and the cesspits the whole day, from morning till the evening. And he says, I decided that I will sublimate this man. He said, when I used to clean these toilets, I used to just praise God. I said, you know, I have this time where the soldiers don't want to come because this is so smelly and they have left me alone. I just want to praise you because now I can quietly pray to you and I can rejoice in you and stuff like that. So he described this time as a glorious time of meeting with God. Now that is sublimation at its highest. There was this Brother Lawrence. He was a Carmelite monk. He was not terribly, you know, he himself says that, you know, I was not very bright. And he was relegated in the monastery to sort of peeling potatoes and mending shoes. And so he would just boil potatoes and peel the skin, you know, the whole day. But he practiced sublimation. That means he practiced the presence of God. He said, God, you give me such a fantastic opportunity to serve the monks here and the students. I hope that they can go and change the world. And he was praying. And he called this the practicing the presence of God. Now that was a form of sublimation. You know, you're turning a disadvantaged situation, a suffering, into an offering to God. There's a story of Philip Yancey. He was scheduled to meet a friend for breakfast at 7:30 and he did not turn up. And initially he felt frustration. And then he began to pray for this friend. And then he began to pray for the waitresses. And then he began to pray for other friends. And then he pulled out his diary and brought the list out and began to pray a lot of people. And he spent the next 1 hour or something praying, and he felt truly energized. And he says, I felt that this was a wonderful offering to God, the fact that this particular mini disaster, I was able to convert it into a bit of a success. So sublimation is the act of converting setbacks into an offering to God, into a little bit of a success. And I think that's a very important skill, because you will have minor setbacks all the time and you have to have the skill to be able to sublimate those, even the small setbacks, into a wonderful offering to God. Since difficulties and failures can be great teachers, sublimation is an important skill. Okay, I think I'll just stop there. I hope some of that has been of some use. Thank you.